We're doing Mishlei, we're up to what's called the 12th chapter, the 12th Pasuk. And the Pasuk says, Chamad Rasha, Mitzod Ra'im. The word Mitzod could mean to hunt, like Tzeda. The word Mitzod could mean fortification, like Mitzuda. So one understanding of the verse is, Chamad Rasha, the wicked desires, Mitzod Ra'im. He is looking to hunt in evil. His evil inclinations are to hunt others and steal their wealth. V'shoresh tzadikim yitin. And the root of the righteous is ever productive. The righteous are focused on what to give the world. And in essence, the verse encapsulizes a whole philosophy where Rav Dessler wrote in his book that there, one can summarize our challenge in life, am I a giver or a taker? And in almost every scenario, one can be a giver or a taker. And that's a whole philosophy that he develops in his book. This understanding of the verse is how the wicked are always thinking how to get more, and they don't mind hunting down other people and doing it in evil ways. Whereas the tzaddik is always that root that's productive, that's going to give forth fruit the way it should. Notice how the righteous are often described as the root, what's underground, what isn't necessarily visible. Or zarua la tzaddik, the light is planted for the righteous. It's going to give fruit. You don't always see the fruit of the righteous right away. It's like education. There are phenomenal stories. This past Purim, there was a student who was... every class would be another challenge. You know, we'd start learning the Gemara, and he'd go, why are you talking Gemara? Who says there's a God? Okay, you told me there's a God. I understand, but next class. Who said the rabbis didn't make it all up? And weren't the rabbis all chauvinists? And you try to do two lines of Gemara, and every time he had to deal with another question. So comes Purim, he's stoned, and he sits down, and he starts telling me, you know, there are different ways to connect to God. So it could be I didn't master so much Talmud, but I connected through all these classes and so many other ways. So you sit down, and you would have asked me in the beginning of the year, what's going to come of this student? I would have said, I don't know how I'm going to give class. You know, it was a challenge where I would have never dreamt I'd hear these pearls of wisdom coming out of him on Purim night. And when he was sober, he backed his pearls of wisdom. He didn't contest that. He left us right after Purim. So that was like our grand finale. But a lot of the investments that we make, even if they're correct investments, they are like sowing seeds. You're planting and you don't know what's going to come of it. Shorish tzadikim, the root of the righteous ultimately bears fruit. But part of being righteous is that you're willing to make that long-term investment. Education. You're going to find yourself telling the same thing over and over and over again. You wonder, the kids heard me, why do I have to tell them the same thing every day? Right? But that's education. Eventually it bears fruit. Education is having the patience to explain again and go through it again until the person gets it. Shoresh, it's described as a root. So that's one understanding in the verse. There's another understanding. Chamad Rasha, the wicked desires, Mitzod Ra'im, to be fortified by other evil people. Meaning there's a certain constant insecurity that envelops people when their behavior is wicked. They need to have their group of buddies. They need to have that protection. The righteous, when he's doing what's right, and the greater a person is, the more this is so, he knows he is his own root. He is being productive. And he doesn't need that positive feedback. Everyone benefits from positive feedback. But shoresh tzadikim yitin, the root of the righteous bears fruit, and he doesn't spend his time thinking, how can I get more people on my side? How can I get more protection? I'll have more people saying backing me. No, if he's going the right way, so then that's going to bear fruit. Chamad Rasha Mitzod Ra'im, according to this interpretation, the evil desire, the fortification of other evil people. The shorsh tzadikim yiten, whereas the righteous, they know that they're going the right path, and so their root will bear fruit. Now, according to this interpretation, Shlomo is telling us a fantastic strength that righteousness should give a person. A fantastic self-worth. Rabbi Beryl Wein once told the story of his daughter who married someone who went out to the Midwest, a community where they were the family that was supposed to strengthen the community. And their children had such great self-worth that after a few days being in school with the other kids, so the other kids came home and said, "We want forelocks like them." You think you're the only kid with forelocks. You're the only kid that has these dangling payas. So the kids with the forelocks would come home and say, "Mommy, I'm different than everyone else." But no, when the kid comes in with self-worth and he knows he's right, so it only took a few days for the other kids to start coming home and say, "Mommy, why don't I have forelocks like them?" There's a tremendous self-worth when a person can really connect and do what's right. Then he is shoish tzadikim. He is the root of righteousness. A root that will give fruit, and he doesn't need everyone else to say, "Yeah, you're right," because he is right. And that's a tremendous strength. Befesha sifataim mokesh ra'am. Because a person isn't careful with his lips, because a person allows himself to talk in a manner that is irresponsible, he sets up his own stumbling block. Befesha sifataim, through the rebelliousness of lips, we let ourselves sometimes just talk, and that talk comes back to haunt us. Befesha sifataim, with rebellious lips, with allowing our lips to just talk, mokesh ra, people set up a bad stumbling block for themselves. Vayetze mitzara tzaddik. And the righteous, because they speak pleasantly and they're careful to say positive things, so that comes back to help them. And then they find themselves coming out of problematic situations because they were able to speak positive. And this is a habit. This is a habit that a person has to develop. It starts with feeling fake. You want to talk positively. The first step is to talk positively, even though you don't feel positive. You feel you got a lot of negative to say. But if we form that habit, then that in turn forms the habit of seeing the positive. It's phenomenal how this works. I once wanted to develop a game for couples to help them build their relationship, where each spouse would get 10 blank cards, and they'd write on the cards. Let's say you'd have his cards were blue and her cards were pink, right? So he gets 10 blank blue cards about himself, and he writes 10 traits, 10 aspects of himself that he thinks are positive traits. She gets 10 pink cards and she writes 10. Now he gets another 10 pink cards and he has to write 10 things that he values about her. And she gets 10 blue cards and she writes 10 things that she values about him. Now you turn the cards upside down and you shuffle. And now she picks one. She has to start describing the thing she picked. And he has to figure out what it is. Now, if she picks let's pick something. You daven with a lot of kavana. You greet people with a warm smile. So now she's going to start describing this aspect of him. It's like charades. By having her describe this aspect of her, it's going to arouse in her the appreciation. Hey, he really does this nice thing. So I thought that was a game which I once wanted to develop. I think it...
I didn't make it to market. I'm just shocked.
I never had the time. So I thought that there should be some standard cards that come in, like to help them out. I have directions, and I think if a couple actually made this game, then they'd walk away from each game in a much better place. Now, it's a habit. If we learn to talk that way, then we will be that way. One of the interesting things that happened to me when I took the pulpit position in Kochav Yaakov, I consulted with many other rabbis. One of them we studied together in yeshiva, and he told me, "You come Friday night to shul, no one cares where you came from. No one cares what hardships you have in your life. No one cares that you came from a funeral to shul. No one cares if you got a shower. No one cares if your wife yelled at you. No one cares if your kids just sliced up your favorite tie. No one cares. They want you to sit up there and smile, be warm, and give them a feeling of positive. You have to exuberate positive optimism. And nothing else in the world exists. That Friday night, they're coming off of their hardships. They're coming off of their wife yelling at them. They're coming off of everything they put up with all week long. And what they want to see is a rabbi that exuberates optimism. That's what you have to do. You walk into shul, you bury the world behind you. You sit up there and be prepared to welcome everyone warmly and with a smile." So, okay. I heard it. Fine. Okay. 3 weeks into the position, I get a phone call as I'm on my way out to shul. A close relative needs a kidney transplant, and it doesn't look like he's going to get it. He passed away 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. He passed away just before Pesach, and he got his kidney transplant. But this story goes back, Mamasha, 2 years ago. And I'm supposed to walk into shul smiling. I just heard this relative is in a terrible situation. You know what? The fact that I was forced to sit up there and put up that smile and say a warm word to everyone that comes and says good shabbos at the end of davening, every Friday night I came home a different person. Because I was forced to be positive. It doesn't matter where I came from, how I walked into shul. I had to spend an hour now, or the last 15 minutes of shul, or the last half hour. The speech has to be positive. Talking to people has to be positive. Okay, well, if you spend so much time faking it, eventually it becomes real. It taught me a lot. You know, we speak about this. But if you force yourself to do it, then you walk away differently. If a person lets his lips just talk, mokesh rai, he keeps setting up stumbling blocks for himself. Whereas when a person is righteous, then the speech that he takes him out of dire situations. And this is a recurring theme in people's lives. I dated a lot of girls, over 50. And I came up with a theory that really I thought carried itself through. I started noticing on the first dates, and usually you could tell even in the first conversation and even on the first date, how the girl describes the people in her life. Does she tell you about the difficult student she's teaching and the difficult boss she's putting up with and the harsh principal that's in her school? Or does she tell you about the magnificent sweet children, the adorable nephews she has, the verbs that a person uses very often are reflective of who the person is, much more than the situation they're in. And it works both ways. If we can get used to speaking positive about people, we will view them positively. We will view life positively. And ultimately, it comes back to bless us. I told you guys the story of how we left the community. When we got engaged, so I came for the last time to be in my parents' community. And my parents made an engagement party because all the people wouldn't come to the wedding here in Israel. So people brought gifts. They realized they wouldn't be at the wedding. So they brought these gifts. We couldn't even carry them back to Israel. But they brought gifts because this is their last opportunity. I took the last Sunday. We were there for a weekend, right, for the engagement party. It was, I think, Sunday afternoon. So then that Sunday night, Monday morning, I sat down and I started writing thank you cards. And I made them personalized thank you cards. I wrote to the Chazan who davened Yomim Noraim, and I said to him, "You should know, I'm going to Israel and I'm taking your tunes for Yom Noraim with me." I wrote to the guy who sang a beautiful Kabbalah Shabbos. I wrote to him about how his Kabbalah Shabbos is something that I'll always try to emulate. And each one I wrote a very personal thank you card and mailed them out and flew out to Israel. My parents told me for the next 2 weeks the doorbell didn't stop ringing. All these people would come and knock and tell them the thank you card. People framed them and hung them up in their house. Because someone finally showed them some appreciation. Here they are singing their heart out. Be it the Chazan and the Bali, Kriya, the Rav. Different people have different things that they teach us. And as a child, you go to shul, you see all these different figures. Each one has their impact on you. And I wanted them to feel good about themselves. People were moved to tears. People were so moved, they came to my parents' house and showed them, look what your son wrote. So, if we can speak positively, we end up building friends. So the story begins earlier this week. There's a guy I know, we're not really friends. I buy in his store, and he's been telling me the last few weeks that he has headaches he can't get rid of. When I was a kid, there was an allergist who I sat next to in shul, and every Shabbos after davening, he'd show me in the Living Torah, Rav Arya Kaplan, he'd show me interesting points that Rav Arya Kaplan brings, the picture of the locust, the picture of the kosher birds, and different insights that Rav Arya Kaplan has in the book. And I always had a karas tov, I always had appreciation for him, and he made aliyah, and we lost contact. Now, I wish him longevity, the man must be in his 90s. I got on the train yesterday, and I see him. And I asked myself, can it be, is it him? It was him. So I walked over to him, I greeted him, Dr. So-and-so, and he recognized me, and he's fully with it, thank God. And we started talking again. Now, you send a person a letter of appreciation. How many letters did you guys get of appreciation? Ask yourself, when was the last time anyone ever wrote you a letter of appreciation? I don't know, I can think of maybe one, two. How many?
Handwritten is really pushing it. Email now and then, but handwritten, that's...
I don't know, how many letters does a person get? And so people remember you. A man could be 90 years old. He told me, you know, I'm finished with grandchildren. Now I'm up to great-grandchildren. You know, that's... And we haven't seen one another for over 2 decades. But he got a letter of appreciation. So there's a... That stays with him. And so that's what the Shlomo HaMelech says. You plant seeds of appreciation. You use your lips to say positive things. You don't even know down the road where that's going to come back to help you. I was thinking, when the storekeeper kept telling me he has headaches, I said, you know, he was a top allergist. I wonder if he's still around, if I could connect the storekeeper with him. And then yesterday I get on the train and I see him. He's still with it. So he remembered me, thank God, and we'll see where that goes. But that's what Shlomo HaMelech says. We have to be careful where we use our lips, and where we use our lips plants either stumbling blocks for our future, or else it plants good things for our future. And you never know where it'll come up again. Mipiri fi ish yisbatov. A person can be satiated of good in his life, and it can be the sole fruits of his speech. It's probably the most underrated thing we have in life. Speech. You can really live off of speech. We had a guy in our shul whose whole job, he would spend every week, we'd hear about how he went to the World Series. His job was PR. He was on a top firm that produced steel. And his job was to be a positive and a optimistic guy that it was fun to go out with. And he represented the firm in taking out the clients to give them a good time. That was his job. Pretty fancy job. He got to see the World Series because he was in a top firm. A person can live...
Friday Night Rabbi, though. He always has to be on. Nobody cares if he has any problems. It's got its payback, but still.
Mipiri fi ish, from a person's... the fruit of a person's mouth, yisbat tov. He can be satiated of good in his life. Ugemul yedei adam yashiv lo. And a person ultimately gets paid back in accordance with what he did in his life. If a person behaved kindly to other people, it'll come back to bless him. If a person behaved differently, so that'll come back to haunt him. That's one of the big things, which we very often think, I'm never going to see this person again. Nah, surprise, people come back in our lives where we least expect them. Chazal interpreted the pasuk to be about Torah. Mipiri fi ish, from the fruits of a person's mouth, the fruits of a person's learning Torah, yisbat tov, The world is satiated of good. Chazal learned from the Pasuk that when we learn Torah, it brings good to the whole world. It's not just us. Ugmul yedei adam yashiv lo. And a person individually is still going to get the merits that he himself accrued in his learning Torah. But the whole world benefits from the Torah that he learns. Tov.